Is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. I have spoken several times on Center Stage about artists who have lived many lives or those who have changed career mid-path. And as Joseph Campbell once said, if you are on the right path, you will find that invisible hands are helping. For some, that right path can come slowly, and sometimes with a cost. My guest today has traveled several roads before he found that right path. With inspiration and listening to his inner voice, artist and curator Zio Morrow has carved out a life many would envy. Zio Morrow is an artist specializing in photography, but he is much, much more. He is a creator, a curator, a chronicler of life, and an architect of how we look at photographs. He builds worlds within his watchful gaze, and then he invites us to view his photographs with an enlightened perspective. Zio Morrow seems to be happiest leading us into the national parks and urban street life of the world and, of course, of America. His photographs and collections commissioned by the National Park Service have been featured in museums throughout the world, from the U.S. to China. Presentations on his work have been shown on PBS, CBS Eyewitness News, and ABC News. Through his eyes, we can discover the mystery and the magic of Weir Farm, the home of the American Impressionists, with his book, Weir Farm, National Historic Site, Images of Modern America, with a foreword by Senator Joseph Lieberman. And now Zio Morrow's work is on display at the Hayes Gallery in Berlin with his images of New York City contemporary life. There is a story behind this recent project, and one which we will connect with today. But first, I want to welcome Zio Morrow to Center Stage. Yours is a compelling journey, and I am honored to have you on my show.
Thanks for having me, Pam. I really appreciate it. And by the way, I must say, only one other person that I know of has pronounced my name as beautifully as you have.
Thank you. That's the singer in me.
you can just call me CEO, though. It's just a lot easier that way.
I love it. I love it. Well, let's get into that name.
Sure. Okay.
This is not your given name, I understand.
No, it's a fake name. Pseudonym. Yeah.
Fake name. No, not fake name. A pseudonym is even better. Now, how did you come upon this choice?
Oh, it's a little bit of a long story, but it might be interesting. For starters, right? As you may know, I'm a lawyer, or was a lawyer. I don't practice anymore. But when I got into photography, I was still practicing law. And many years before that, when I was more active as a musician, I worked for a law firm. And what happened was I had photographs in my office of me and the band. And the lawyer that I worked for would complain that I wasn't working hard enough, even though I was, but he would keep pointing his fingers at my pictures and saying, you see, the reason why you're not working hard enough is because your mind's on that. And it's true, my mind was on that, but I was working hard and I was doing my job. He kept on bringing that up and I got tired of it after a while. So I removed all the pictures and magically, I never got a complaint again. So I learned from that. Now, this is a long time ago before there was the internet. Later on, when I moved to photography, and I started working at these bigger law firms, and of course we had the internet, I was afraid that they might see different articles about my work and then once again use that as an excuse for giving me a hard time. So I decided, all right, let me come up with a pseudonym that represents who I am. And this way it's a little bit hard for them to find me. So I did some searching. I needed a name for the website. So I had to find something that was available. I love the look as visually of the letter X. I just like the way that looks. And I wanted something that was connected with my, you know, with my heritage. So my family came from Puerto Rico, Cuba, and also it traces back to the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa, which, you know, is part of Spain. So there's a very old female name, Xiomara, with an A at the end. And that name, I liked it because it was available and it had the X. So I just made it masculine by adding an O at the end, and it was available. I took the name And I haven't been found out yet that I was a lawyer doing the photography. They never found out. Now, the New York Times, when they interviewed me, you know, they insisted on knowing what my real name was, because that's, you know, it's their paper of record. So they wanted to publish it. And I was trying to get them not to do it. But I can tell that if I insisted, they were going to not, they were going to pull the article.
Right.
So I said, all right, go ahead. Here's my name. But thankfully, as far as I know, the law firm I was working for at the time never came across it. So I was safe.
How interesting. So can you reveal to us what the meaning of this word is?
See, yeah, it actually means ready for battle.
I love
and
it.
I thought that was very interesting because as far as I feel, I've always been battling one thing or another. I mean, I was bullied a lot when I was in school. So there was kind of battling there. You know, getting into law school and getting a job was difficult for a variety of reasons. But the biggest battle really was overcoming cancer. So I was diagnosed with prostate cancer back in 2004. Fortunately, it was caught early, and through surgery, they were able to deal with it so that I was able to recover. So it triggered a lot of soul searching and a lot of thinking about what I wanted to do. And what was interesting was in those final months, what I thought were going to be possibly final months, I was actually mixing a live CD of a concert that I did with a band that I had at the time. And I just dove right into it. I said, well, you know, if I'm going to go out, I want to at least have a CD that's out there. I never had one before. So it actually motivated me to work even harder. And that was just part of the battle. One month later, I was already doing a show. Of course, I had to sit on a stool. I wasn't jumping around, but I was still able to perform. Of course, you know, every year I had to have my blood checked to make sure, you know, there wasn't any signs of cancer coming back.
Right.
But after 10 years of that, I got a clean bill of health. So I really try to seize the day, carpe diem, and just try to make the most of every day. And it's really helped me to prioritize and decide, you know, what I really want to spend time with. And that's what accounted for the change eventually from law to full-time art practice.
I adore this. First of all, we have to thank the attorney who came in and pointed out the picture. Mm. Because somehow, you know how I quoted Joseph Campbell earlier, and he always says in the hero's journey, there's a person who facilitates sometimes what we don't see. Mm. And perhaps he was that person. You know, before your cancer diagnosis, actually, you were connected to a fork in the road and you weren't aware of it yet. And here it came. Isn't that interesting?
No, it's a very good point you brought up, although I didn't like it at the time.
Yeah, who would?
I don't bear any animosity toward them, you know, but yeah, that's part of being ready for battle. You know, when someone issues a challenge, I get annoyed at it. It makes me upset, but it also motivates me even more. I just work a little harder. So it's almost like fuel for the artistry. And
exactly.
I like it.
But you have always possessed an artist's soul. I mean, you were a musician first initially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think this career path coming full circle back, I mean, you did the right thing. You went out in the world, you wanted to become a big shot lawyer and do well. And that just wasn't really what the universe had in mind for you, right?
No, you're correct. As far back as I can remember, I was always drawn to music and I wanted to pursue something in the arts. I mean, I was always very good at drawing and painting and all those sorts of things, but I just didn't know how to do it. I was the first in my family to go to college. So I didn't have, you know, members of the family who knew kind of how the world worked in that way.
Right.
So their idea, which I agreed with, was, well, we're immigrants and you're a first generation American. You got to kind of know how to put your dukes up in this world. So they, you know, law school was an option. What's good about law school is if you go to law school, you don't necessarily have to practice law. It's a degree that has many different applications in other fields. Mm-hmm. But I thought that gave me some options. And so what happened was when I graduated law school, I started working in the litigation department of a big law firm, and I didn't like it at all. I didn't fit in. Mm. But I was able to transition into establishing my own law practice where I specialize in representing creative people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I was what they call an entertainment lawyer.
Right.
So most of the clients I represented were musicians. I even managed an artist on a major label for several years. But I also had folks who were involved in Broadway and film and actors and actresses and all that sort of thing, comedians. So it was all kinds of creative people. And that was a pretty nice compromise because I was able to practice law, which isn't always that exciting, but I was able to do it on behalf of very interesting clients. And I was able to, in some cases, you know, kind of hang out with them and see how they create their own art. So I learned a lot from that. And a lot of it I actually apply to myself now.
I can imagine. And let's be honest, entertainment law is fabulous and it's very lucrative. I mean,
yeah, it can be. It depends. It's interesting. It can be very lucrative. Like there were times where I felt like I was, you know, doing very, very well. Then there were other times when it didn't seem that way because the artists, sometimes they shoot themselves in the foot. So they're doing very well commercially, but then they start taking themselves too seriously or they start believing their own press releases. And then they start creating enemies and burning bridges. The public might change their tastes and then they can't change with it. And then most importantly, that they're not good stewards of their wealth. So they end up losing a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I had these very famous people that I was representing, but they couldn't even afford to spend an hour with me. And so I was constantly struggling to figure out ways to make it affordable for them to get the legal advice they needed. So that was tricky. And then the other thing too is there's not a lot of loyalty. A lot of times I stuck with clients when they were starting out. And then just as they reach the pinnacle of success, you know, they go to somebody else. You know, they like, go, well, that lawyer represents bigger clients than you. So I'm going over there.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a tough business, but I learned a lot from it. It was a lot more interesting than doing corporate law. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
So it is what it is, as they say.
So that gave you the business acumen to actually make yourself successful in this current role as a photographer and a creator.
Yeah, I think so, because I learned a lot about what worked for people and also what didn't work for them. And as I mentioned, I manage an artist on a major label. She was on EMI Records. And so you get to see from the inside how things work. And you also get to see how there's a lot of incompetence. You know, people have these very fancy titles and very fancy offices and are making a lot of money. It's amazing how dumb they can be, to be quite honest with you. And so I learned to see behind the Wizard of Oz, the little man hiding behind the curtain.
The curtain.
Yeah. And that made me a little bit more brazen and a little bit more confident in myself. Like, you know, they're as dumb as I am. So I may as well just give it a shot and see what happens.
I love that. I love that. They're all real, standing behind that curtain with their little shoes just showing.
And a lot of it, too, is a lot of the artists I worked with just bought into the romanticized idea of what an artist is, which is all the glamorous, fun stuff. And that does happen for a while. But a lot of it is really very boring. Well, not boring, but it's just hard work. You got to put your, you know, nose down to the grindstone. I don't know what metaphor I'm using here. But, you know, there's a lot of day-to-day administrative work that has to happen in order to get to the next stage. And even if you have a manager or some representative or an agent, you can't just rely on them because they have other people they got to work with. Sometimes they're not quite sure what they're doing either. So I think it's good for artists to empower themselves and try to learn to do as much of that as they can. Even though I know it's not the most exciting thing, we'd rather just spend all our time doing artwork, but otherwise you end up being like Da Vinci. You know, you have a lot of brilliant ideas and you create a lot of things and you rarely finish them. I want to finish things. I want to get it done. Okay. I want to get it out there in the world. Okay. And I want it to have a chance of having some traction. So I try not to take on too many projects. I try to take one thing and see it to the end.
This is fascinating. Yeah. So the traction you are now gaining in your present life, talk to me about going from this entertainment law arena, fighting the cancer, you're ready for battle with your name, Maceo Amaro, which is so perfect. And I don't know if you realize it, but my name, Kühn, in German, means courageous.
Oh, wow.
But it's courageous with a sense of an all-worldliness. Mm-hmm. And I love that because I've felt that I've been ready for battle too in my life in many, many, many ways. I've never encountered the cancer that you have. But when was it that you discovered you could just let everything sink away and you could find the passion that you wanted so much to be your everyday life?
Well, when I woke up from surgery, because when they gave me the anesthesia, I wasn't sure if I was going to wake up yet. So when I woke up, you know, I started really thinking about what do I do now? And so the easy thing would be to revert back to what I'd always been doing. But I figured, you know, why not just try something different? You know, just try something new. For many, many years, I've been representing other people and helping them with their artwork. Mm-hmm. And I was always trying to sneak in mine when I can on the side and never got to finish them. And that was very frustrating.
Right.
I think, well, why not just do my own thing? You know, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Yeah, I could not make money and lose things, but, you know, I can always work and make more money. See, you can always make more money, but you can't make more time. That's the problem. You know, the time is limited. Mm-hmm. And you can't always make more opportunities. Sometimes the opportunities come and you don't get them again. So I wanted to try something different, something bold. And that also meant getting rid of a lot of people who were surrounding my life, who were pseudo friends. You know, I thought they were friends. They didn't visit me in the hospital except for one family. And so I said, well, you know, I'm just going to start completely all over. I'm going to get rid of everybody, start fresh, make new friends, start with a new name. So that was also part of the reason for the pseudonym. It was not just a hide for my employer.
Yeah.
But I think psychologically, it gives you permission to kind of have a different personality. So, I just felt that if I don't do it now, then when am I ever going to do it? I mean, when am I going to start? So I may as well just do it now and see what happens and just give it a shot. And I had no clue what I was going to do. I mean, I thought about music, but music's very difficult because I do rock music. So you always got to deal with a band. And there's always somebody who doesn't pull their own weight or they got some other issue. And so it's hard to find musicians. But photography, what was great about it is that I don't need a band for photography. All I need is me. And if I want to stay up all night long, and I've done that, to get pictures done or get anything done, I can do it. There's no one to stop me. I don't have to get permission from other people in a band or try to get them on board with it. So I like that I'm in control of that. And so I was in Colorado on a family reunion. And while we were out there, we, you know, went to different national parks and I kind of wandered around on my own. And what I like about the camera too is it's a solitary endeavor. You know, with a band, you got to deal with other people. Maybe they annoy you. And I just got over cancers. I wasn't really in a good mood to begin with. But I started photographing the family members of the reunion, and I was photographing these different parks. And it was a big reunion, a lot of people there, many I didn't even know. And consistently, I was getting very good comments about the photographs to the point where I was thinking, you know what? I don't think they're just being polite to me because I'm a family member, because many of them don't even know who I am. Mm-hmm. They seem to genuinely like the pictures. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of gave me some confidence that maybe this is a path I can pursue. And so what happened, Pam, was, as I mentioned, a month after the surgery, I was already doing shows again. By that point, I got rid of the band and it was just me doing solo performances. But what I was doing was I was exhibiting these photographs that I took at my concerts. And a lot of people were buying the pictures, even over my CD. And my profit margin was better in the pictures too, by the way. That was good. So again, these are complete strangers who don't know me. And they like the pictures enough where they want to pay money for them. So I said, well, that's another indicator that there's something here that I can work with.
Right.
And so that made me even get into it even more. The problem was, again, was where do I go with this thing? It all kind of came together, started to converge when I got an email from the AAA, Automobile Association of America. And in their email, they were recommending this park that I never heard of in Connecticut called Weir Farm National Historic Site. Now it's called Weir Farm National Historical Park. And they said, this is a great place for a day trip. It's a national park site based on this very famous founder of the American version of Impressionism, Julian Alden Weir. And I never heard of him. And I studied art history and it just didn't ring a bell. So I was intrigued by it. And I went up there and I saw the place and I loved it. We went on a ranger-led tour. And the ranger, and I wish I could remember exactly which ranger it is, I can thank her. But she kept on mentioning this artist in residence program at Weir Farm. And I never heard of an artist residence program. But she described it. She goes, you apply, if you get accepted, you get to live in this historic cottage for a month. You can, you know, pursue any art you want. And I said, wow, that's what I need. I need a month where I can be by myself and really think through where I go from here. So she said, you know, if you're interested or know somebody who's interested, there's an application you can get at the visitor center. And I wanted that application really badly, but I was, I didn't think I was worthy of getting this, of applying. How dare I even think that I'm an artist, let alone apply for an artist in residency?
Right.
Right. So I'm walking to the parking lot and we're about to enter the car. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't leave here without that application. I think it's going to be a mistake. So, you know, because, you know, I'm a macho Latino man, right? I turned or I spun around. And I said to my wife, you get the application for me. So So she did.
Typical.
I was too embarrassed to go there myself and ask for the application. That's how humble I was about my abilities. I just didn't think I was worthy. So I asked her to do it for me, you know, and she did. And I'm very grateful for that. I filled it out not thinking I would get accepted. But I figured this is a good exercise because they asked a lot of really good questions about mm-hmm. the art. And I didn't really thought about it before. But when I did my research, I realized that the folks that they were accepting were people who were older than me. They had PhDs and masters of arts, and they had, they were professors of art, and they had these big resumes of exhibits, and I had zero. I had none of that stuff. So I said, there's no way they're going to take me, but I'll give it a shot. So I did it. And then to my amazement, they actually accepted me. And to this day, I keep thinking, you know, maybe somebody canceled and they had to fill the spot and they just put me in there. I don't know what the reason is. I don't really care. I'm just glad they did it.
Absolutely.
So I got accepted. And that's how everything began, because then I had a chance to really focus. And what was really good was that I loved Weir Farm. I just thought it was a very beautiful place. I photographed mm-hmm. it. That became my project. Mm-hmm. And I think that was ended up being a good thing, because from what I was told, a lot of folks will come to these residencies at Weir Farm and they bring in projects that they already have started.
Right.
Or might be something not related to the park, which is permissible. It's perfectly fine.
Sure.
But they really liked the idea that I was photographing the park. And so I had an open studio, which is part of what you're required to do. And one of the folks who came to see it was Weir's grandson, Charles Ooh, Burlingham. Wow. How's
wow.
that, right?
Wow.
So he came and he's looking at all the pictures and he really liked it, you know, and I was really happy that it made him feel good because this is about his family. So at the time, Weir Farm was just, the buildings weren't even open yet. You know, they were not restored yet. So the public could only go to the grounds. And I had a lot of really nice pictures of the buildings, like the Weir House, the Weir Studio. Mm-hmm. And so he could tell, I guess he sensed that I was genuinely enthralled with the architecture and the history. So he says to me, you know what? Would you like to photograph the inside? Would you like to see the inside of these structures? Is it close to the public?
Wow.
I go, yeah, I sure would. He goes, well, I think I can get you a special dispensation. That was the word he used. I always remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently he spoke to the park officials. And sure enough, they had a couple of people from the park who came on a Sunday of all days. And they gave me a personal tour of the insides of these structures, which nobody gets to see. I took some quick pictures with my camera, but it was very dark in there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I didn't want to take advantage of the courtesy that they granted me.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't want to linger and set up a picture the right way. So the pictures came out pretty bad, to be honest with you. After the residency, I was lost. Like, so, all right, this residency, that's great. What do I do now? And I was kind of floundering. And then all of a sudden, I got a phone call from the park service, or an email. I mean, they said, the park is interested in your pictures that you took during that little tour, a personal tour you did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of vaguely worded in such a way that I was a little bit worried. I said, oh, man, maybe I was not supposed to take pictures. You know, I hope I didn't do anything wrong. What do they want to do to me? And so I followed up with them. And it turned out that they wanted the pictures to use it, you know, for their own purposes. You know, they just wanted to license it or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, you know, flattered by that. I said, you know, you're more than happy to them. But to be perfectly honest with you, they're not very good, you know, because they're dark and all that. And I was in a rush and they're blurry and. But, you know, I think I can do a proper job if,
right.
you know, if you give me access and I can, you know, take some time with it. So they said yes. They formally commissioned me for it. And so it was my first paid job as a photographer. And they were pleased with those pictures because I was able to photograph the interiors before they were restored.
Right.
And once they were restored, you're never going to see it this way again. So it was kind of, it was documentary, but it was also artistic in my approach. I felt like even though the structures are empty, there's still a sense of knowing who lived in this structure. There was something artistic about it. It was almost
wow.
like a spirit that's in there.
Wow.
And then it continued after that. Once they restored it, I took pictures of that. And then they wanted me to take pictures of the grounds because the grounds, it's a cultural landscape that inspired the creation of many paintings that you'll see at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. In other world-class museums,
yes.
which was commemorated in the 2020 U.S. quarter. So, you know, it continued after that. And then, of course, other parks got wind of what I was doing. And then they asked me to do the same thing for them. So it just continued after that. And that's what kind of got the whole thing rolling.
Let me ask you the obvious question. At what point in there did you get rid of the imposter syndrome? At what point did you start to think, actually...
Yeah.
Maybe I'm an artist. And one more thing, Do you realize how many facilitators you've had along the way?
Oh, yeah.
You've had all these angels guiding you, just like that park ranger saying, you know, there's an application. It's extraordinary to me how sometimes there's a certain energy that takes place when we are looking for a path, but we're not really aware of it yet. And once somebody opens a door, boom, look what happens.
It's astounding. I mean, it's almost like a movie script. Maybe after I'm dead, somebody will do a movie. Because it's almost hard to believe. Yeah, it's all these little pieces that fall into place. When I was managing artists and working with them and all that, you try to make things happen. But there's some things just happen on their own. So
that's right.
I got this email from AAA. So they're kind of like an angel, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I still had to make the decision to pursue it and go there and visit. And then I went. And then, again, the ranger mentioned the application. But it was up to me to take some action and take a step and follow through. And not everyone does that. I mean, I've represented people who paid me a lot of money to get them opportunities. And I get them the opportunity. And then they don't follow through.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So
Almost like their own worst enemy, or there's a fear factor. So you have to be able to follow through. But I would say, Pam, to answer your question, once I got accepted as an artist in residence at Weir Farm, that was the first time I felt comfortable using the word artist without feeling too embarrassed. I still had some imposter syndrome, and I still have it to this day in varying amounts. It just depends on the day. But but I'm not ashamed to say I'm an artist. I do believe I am intrinsically more than, say, being a lawyer.
That's just
my nature. I mean, when I graduated law school, I was embarrassed to say I was a lawyer. I didn't think I was worthy until I had some experience.
As you can see, photographer and Renaissance man Zio Mauro is a force of nature, or as his name suggests, ready for battle. This is a taster of the Zio Mauro magic. His journey is inspiring. His talent is guided by humility. Please join us for part two of this interview when I return after the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival on May 6th. Zio Mauro shares his experiences photographing American historical sites and national parks. But it is his soon-to-be-published collection of photographs of life on New York City streets that is going to tell the real story of this man's path. Find more information out at ziomauro.com, and that is ximaro.com. And please go to Center Stage with Pamela Kuhn for more shows like this. In the meantime, stay safe out there, everyone. This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.